Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
What's up, Ninfriendos? It's Nintendo Voice Chat, episode 681. It's me, your host, Seth Macy, straight from the Techno Dungeon. This week, I am joined by People's Champion, Reb Valentine.
What is up to Mr. Seth Macy?
Hello. Jada, every podcast, Griffin.
That is me. You know, honestly, I've been on every podcast but Unlocked. That's the only one I haven't done. They just haven't invited me on it.
They should really get on that.
Yeah, otherwise the nickname doesn't work.
Yep.
And then Tom Marks, back for the first time since forever.
Yeah.
Dad of the year right here.
Right there. Tom.
So happy
Thank
to see you.
I'm glad to be back. Yes, if the people didn't hear, I don't talk about it very much, but I had a kid 3 months ago.
Yay!
And that's where I've been. Hooray. Yep. And so I'm very sleepy, but happy to be back.
You will be sleepy for a decade. So, and then by the time you're not, you're just tired because you're old. But, all right. Before we get into this week's show, a few things I have to do. A little housekeeping. First of all, check out my IGN Shirt Club shirt, Dubious Foods. Wait, I'm leaning the wrong way. You can go to the IGN store, get this right now, limited time only. If you don't get it, you're going to have to go on eBay, where it will undoubtedly become a hot collector's item. But yeah. This one is pretty sick, and I'm actually really stoked to be wearing it. But the other thing that has nothing to do with video games, even. Last week, I talked about how I was going to go pick some apples off the apple tree in the backyard. I don't remember the name of the cultivar of apple that I have in my backyard, but it produces very large apples. I wanted to show you this extremely large.
How do you like them apples?
That's a juicy one.
These are big old funky boys, and this is the size, literally the size of a softball.
See, but this is
so
deceptive.
That is a big apple.
Can we get like an ASMR crunch test?
No. This is for my wife is going to make an apple cake because my birthday is approaching. Maybe an apple pie.
This is a classic, like, classic banana for scale problem, though, because Seth Macy is an extra large sized human. You're like 12 feet tall. So the apple kind of looks normal, which means it is enormous.
Yes.
Well, the problem is the bananas that I bought, I was going to do the banana for scale, but the bananas, for whatever reason at the store, are also huge this week. So
they grow things differently in Maine, apparently.
I guess, our famous banana plantations that we have in Maine are just producing. But
what do you have that you can compare it to? Do you have like an N64 cartridge or something sitting around? You don't have a banana. Do you have Donkey Kong 64?
I mean, yeah, it's sitting in a 64 playing.
Here's a regular NES controller.
Oh, yeah, that's a pretty big apple.
That is an extremely large apple.
Yeah.
It's a huge apple. It probably weighs, like, literally, it probably weighs about a pound. That's exciting.
It looks amazing. I'm super jealous.
Hey, thanks for joining us on Apple Voice Chat. Oh, you know what I should have done? I should have done it next to my iPhone. It's an Apple. I've been comparing apples to apples.
Boo.
Except for I have a Pro Max. So that doesn't...
Boo.
Listen.
I regret coming back.
Man, I went to the gym this morning. I got a huge, like, awesome pump. I'm feeling incredible today. So anyway, let's get into it. Not a lot happening in the world of Nintendo. They announced some Animal Crossing Lego sets like this morning. Just said that they like acknowledged their existence. They didn't tell us anything else.
They look cute.
Adorable. Yeah. Those are going to be going fast. But because that's the only thing that's happening, and it was the only thing, and it only happened this morning, we have gathered together this week to talk about some Switch hidden gems, some indie recs. Because one of the things that people want to hear the most, according to research firm NPD Group, which is not called that anymore. is they specifically market research shows they want Reb and Tom to give indie recommendations. And so we brought them here with Jada, who also banging recommendations, one of the most talented video game players on earth. So these are all going to be certified just heaters. These are going to be incredible games. If you don't like one of these recommendations, that's on you. That is your fault.
This is a really long list, so I actually think that's between all four of us, plus the recommendations read through in a comment.
If you don't find a game
so.
That you like on this list, I don't know what
you
else
might not like video
you.
Games.
Yep. You're probably one of those people who's like, oh, Christmas, blah. I would rather sleep in that day than have food. And
they're the people who are at Halloween handing out like dental floss instead of candy.
If you hand out dental floss on Halloween, no excuse for what happens to your car or your house. Like, I get it. Like, it's a dental hygiene is extremely important. I had lots
You're
of surgery
NPC.
Because I ignored that for a while. Everything's fine now. So, yeah, no, throw eggs at people's houses on Halloween is what I'm advocating for. So, anyway.
Brush your teeth.
Jada, brush your teeth. Floss. Floss is so important. People don't. Anyway. Actually, eating an apple is very good for your teeth. Mm-hmm. Jada, what's up? What you got for us?
All right. So, you know, I know we're talking indies and hidden gems and such. I'm going the AAA or quadruple A route because all my games start with the letter A. So it's maybe a little confusing. The first one I'm going...
Oh, come on!
It's kind of great, right?
That was a good joke and nobody...
I laughed!
Wait.
Nobody laughed at me.
Wait,
I went,
Fantastic. I love it the second time around, even better than the first time.
No one laughed, and it was correct.
Stick to the apples.
This is Tom's last appearance as a father on our show.
Was that a threat for my kid?
Like, no, I would never.
Oh, my goodness. Like,
where is this going?
Oh,
it's going back to Jada.
All right. So we'll start off with the biggest one on the list, and that's going to be Astral Chains. Astral Chains is one of those games where you've heard about it. Everybody's like, why don't you talk about this game more? Why isn't this in more lists? Yeah. This game is fantastic. It is it's Platinum Games at some of their best. Just over-the-top action, just really good, very stylistic, solid storyline. And it's just like... It's one of those games you just kind of need to play it to really understand where its brilliance is. But yeah, I loved everything about it. And I haven't put enough time into this. I've played probably, I don't know, maybe a third of it. But man, I love it so much. It's just, it came out during a time when a lot of other things were out and it got overshadowed by a lot of things, but highly recommend Astral Chains. It's also probably one of the more pricier ones on that we're going to probably be recommending today, but definitely recommend Astral Chains. If you like Bayonetta, you like Devil May Cry, you're going to be right at home with Astral Chains and all their gameplay and combat scenarios for that one.
Yeah. This is one of those games that when it goes on sale, it's $40. That's the sale price.
Yep.
So I don't know why, because nobody ever talks about it. So we got some Prime Day stuff coming. We got Black Friday. Hopefully it'll be like $20 and then I'll scoop it for sure.
It is like surprisingly good. I remembered looking at it and thinking, oh, this is, you know, going to be another kind of like throwaway slashy anime game. There's a whole lot of those. But I watched my, live-in romantic marital spouse play through this. He really seemed to dig it, and the combat looked nice and...
It's very crunchy. It's fluid. Crunchy, yeah. It's fluid. It's crunchy. You feel the impact. It's great. It feels like a very solid action game. Highly recommend it.
Nice. All right. Astral Chain. This goes out to that one guy who's always...
picked it just for you.
It's on Twitter. He's like, why doesn't anyone ever mention Astral Chain? It's one of the greatest games of all time. You should be talking about it every week. I'm like, because nobody is thinking about it.
Unfortunately.
They should be. Yeah,
I agree.
Well, now I hope everyone is thinking about it. It's like, don't think of a pink elephant. So don't think of it.
Don't think of Elephant Mario.
Don't think of
Impossible. Impossible.
I think about Elephant Mario every day since they revealed him.
Yep.
Every day we grow closer to our Mario elephant future.
We've only got like 2 weeks. It's great.
I know. That's not a hidden gem, though. Jada, what you got next?
Next one is a little indie title called Ape Out.
Ape Out with your nape out.
Ape Out is this great little kind of top-down game where you play as this ape that has escaped, and you have to get from point A to point B while dodging security cameras, guards, everything like that. But you don't have to, you know, just avoid them. You can, you know, grab them, use them as bodyguards. Nice. Or body armor, throw them at each other, slam them into walls, use them to break through walls or like glass and such. It's great. It's a lot of fun. It's very quick and frantic. And it's got a lot of levels. So like very fun, very quick kind of like pick up and play action. I forgot that you can use them to shoot their guns and just obliterate everybody. Yeah, and it's great. Yeah. Ripping doors off of walls. There's
phenomenal
those alarms.
Music too.
Yeah. If you're watching the footage right now and thinking, oh, that looks really like smashy and snappy, the percussive soundtrack that goes with it.
There's like this freeform jazz soundtrack to it that every action you take kind of adds like a thing to the and it's just so it feeds into the game so well.
Dynamic.
It's about the notes you don't play, basically.
Yep.
Except in this case, the notes you're playing are murder, so they're pretty important.
Well, maybe they shouldn't have put an ape in a cage at the top of a skyscraper. Yeah, I don't know. Exactly. Think before you
classic
act.
Mistake. Classic.
It's 100%
like,
classic.
Yeah,
mistake.
It's like Ape 101. You tell you to. By the way, check out Chimp Empire on Netflix. That show is awesome. You want to see some apes going crazy?
Ape?
But real life ones, not like. Jada, what's up? What's next?
Oh my goodness. So I'm gonna jump around because I'm forgetting my number three one, but my number four one is an upcoming one that currently has a demo on the Steam right now, but will also be dropping on Switch later, and that is Another Crab's Treasure by Aggro Crab. This is if you like Souls-like games, but you wanted a more cutesy approach to them, Another Crab's Treasure is right up your alley. You play as this little crab named Krill. Under the water, under
that's
the sea.
That's a totally different animal.
And it is. But it's fine.
You play as a dog named Seagull. I'm sorry.
I mean, it's like naming your child Elephant Mario.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah.
Tom said not to talk about his daughter's name.
Thank goodness. But yeah, Another Crab's Treasure. Super delightful. Very solid mechanics for a Souls-like game. Like I was playing it yesterday on PC, and it feels just so smooth. It's still it's still like in development, but they did such a great job with it. All the different little bottles and shot glasses and ice cream cones and cans that you can use, put on your back. They all have different magical abilities and give you different spells. So depending on which one you have equipped, gives you different things. So like wearing a ice cream cone allows you to do an AoE freeze that freezes people nearby. Soda cans launch bubbles that are, like, are homing. That launch in on people, so it's, you just hit people with bubbles, which is great. And there's some really solid accessibility options in there too. My favorite of which is, if you look deep enough in the accessibility options, you can give Krill a gun. And so if you don't want to have to deal with the blocking, dodging, parrying, anything like that that normally is in a Souls game, just give Krill a gun and then just go around and shooting other crabs and creatures under the sea.
That is a phenomenal accessibility option.
I just love that.
Yeah,
it's one of those things that's just like, it's not something I expected to see.
It's good.
But super welcome, and it's great because, you know, everybody can kind of, if you ever get stuck on something, you can just kind of give yourself a gun.
Nobody can complain like, oh, easy mode for babies. It's like, dude, they gave a crab a gun.
Yep.
Like, what more do you want?
Yeah, are these people against crabs having guns? Really?
Yeah, apparently they are. Because they're like, oh, fun? That sounds like something I'm not interested
in. It's 2023. Get with the program.
Yep.
It's 2023. Our crabs should be armed.
And they're, like, this isn't the first game where we've had crabs fighting. I think there was another one on Steam that had, like, you literally were just, like, fencing with crabs against other crabs. And it's great.
Let's not forget giant enemy crabs.
Yep. We need more crabs in our games, is what I'm saying.
Crabs are cool.
Crabs are cool.
They're an interesting, not particularly intelligent creature that tastes delicious. Oh, and for my money, it doesn't get much better than something that tastes good and is dumb, because then you don't quite feel so ethically torn about eating it.
I had the most amazing crab tofu soup the other day. It was so good.
Oh,
freaking amazing.
Don't even get me started. I might just go down to the shore and see what I can find under some rocks later on. Jada, did you have anything else for
us? Okay, I do remember my fourth and final one, and I apologize, Red, I did not put this one in the show notes. I've talked about this one in the past on the show and many podcasts, but I always got to give a shout-out to my bud that Aerial Knights Never Yield.
Yeah!
That game is fantastic, side-scrolling, running. The music is just...
I'm not familiar with this one at all.
This one, Seth, you'll want to play. It is fantastic. It's very fast-paced. The music is amazing. Story is... I don't want to say simple, but it's like, it's straight to the point. You're just focusing on jumping over, dodging, sliding over things. It's just really fast paced. The music goes with you. It's fantastic. There's some great, bonus level challenges and stuff in there.
Vein of like the BitTrip Runner series, right? Sort of.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, very cool. Very stylistic. I freaking love this game. It was on my trophy sprint, I think, last year, where I platinumed, like, I don't know, 15 games in 2 weeks or 16 games in 2 weeks, whatever I did last year. But this is one of the ones on there.
Keep that on Beyond. This is the Nintendo podcast.
Hey, you know what? I played it on Switch.
Here.
I played it on Switch and PlayStation. So there you go. But yeah.
Satisfaction of a job well done is all the achievement I need.
But yeah, that is my games of Hidden
Gems.
That's
a very solid
list.
Now it goes to Reb. You got to beat that. I forgot to tell you, this is a competition.
I would never dare to score points using video games, Seth.
That's the whole point of video games, to get points, though.
Oh, the point.
Yeah, that's the point of getting...
I'm going to talk about the games on this list now. I can't do this. First up is a little game called Everhood, which I believe just got like... some sort of deluxe edition recently or an update or some more songs. I don't quite know. Everhood is a weird little game that looks like visually like Undertale. Like it's got that kind of like lo-fi style. The text, the font is very similar. The battles kind of have a similar staging to them. Well, I think what we're looking at right now, if you're watching visually, is the trailer for Everhood 2, which is not out yet. Everhood 1 is this game where you play as a wooden puppet fellow called Red. I read, who loses his arm, and it is stolen from him by a evil guy named Gold Pig, and you try to go get it back from him, and you work your way through the world, sort of top-down exploration. There's puzzles to solve, and there are these battles that are musical battles, and they're rhythm-based, but instead of you having to move on the rhythm, the enemies attack on the rhythm, and you have to dodge on this sort of field where you can move back and forth and jump, and the music is really good. It's really intense. The battles are really cool. But the thing that I like the most about Everhood is it draws you in by sort of having the same visual style as Undertale. And so if you like the sort of subversion of typical RPGs that Undertale did, Everhood feels like a meta commentary on that subversion. Because halfway through the game, so originally you're off to get your arm back from Gold Pig, and that's the quest. And halfway through the game, you succeed. You get your arm back. Sorry, spoilers, but you do.
Sweet.
But when you get your arm back, the game changes and the goal changes and what it's about changes. And the whole thing becomes this really interesting meta commentary on the whole idea in Undertale of monster deaths being significant. It is really weird and cool and trippy and not at all what I expected, and I freaking loved it. It's also not very long. It's like single digit number of hours. You should play Everhood. There's a sequel coming out sometime in the future. I have no idea where they're going to take a sequel, because the ending is not exactly something I expected a sequel from. But it's dope as all get out.
All right, so far your first pick, pretty darn good. You might be pulling ahead of Jada.
Wow, with one game?
I know. I can't compare people's champ. Just can't compete.
This isn't really a competition. I wouldn't pit anybody against one another without them knowing it beforehand. What's next, Reb?
I've got a long list, and Tom's got an even longer one, so we're going to keep going.
Well, I know, and we have a long show.
I don't need to.
I'm the host. If we want to just talk about games, like, God forbid we talk about games the whole show.
Oh, no.
I kind of stream of consciousness my list. I was going to maybe slim it down, and then I didn't have time to before the show. So,
No. We're gonna power on through. So next up is a little game called Minute that was my game of the year, I believe, I can't remember if it came out in 2017 or 2018. I think it was 2018.
It's a million years ago.
I know.
Very good.
It's a top-down, one-bit exploration game.
Oh my God, I remember this.
Sort of Zelda style in that regard. You're a little fellow. You pick up on the beach at the very beginning of the game a sword that is cursed. And the curse of the sword is that you can only play the game for 1 minute. So you have 60 seconds to do whatever it is you're going to do, and then you die and have to start over. And you're basically sort of trying to figure out how to accomplish the things you need to accomplish in the amount of time the game gives you. And that sounds insane, but it works. So there are certain things that you can get that will persist throughout each playthrough. So fairly early on, you get a thing that gives you the ability to move boxes. And then after you've done that, you no longer need to do the steps it took to get the thing that lets you move boxes. You just have that ability from now on, and so you can always move boxes. There's also a couple checkpoints throughout the game that will allow you to start in different places in the world, so you're no longer starting from your house each time when the 60-second counter runs out. You're basically trying to... you're constantly thinking... It's very roguelike in that sense.
It's Groundhog's Day.
You're thinking about it in terms of runs. Like, what am I going to accomplish in this 60 seconds? And the thing I love about Minute is that it's so tight. Whatever it is you need to do in that... Everything is designed to be done in that 60-second window. And it just feels very cohesive and thought through. It feels complete in a way that I think a lot of games don't always feel. It has the exact right amount of stuff in it in the exact right amount of places. It's really, just really nicely done. I love Minute.
And that's M-I-N-I-T.
Yes, Minute.
And not to sound like a broken record, but also a game with incredible music.
Yes.
Yep.
I think most of my recommendations have really good soundtracks. So if you just want to listen to soundtracks, I'm here for you.
I sometimes will put the Wind Waker Overworld theme on when I'm working the 10-hour loop.
Oh, and
because I love
it is a really good Overworld theme.
I did forget to mention that Another Crab's Treasure music is a bop. It's so good.
Crab music?
It's got hip hop beats and everything. It is good. I know what kind of person designed this. This is somebody who's messed around on a table or whatnot. They've been mixing for a while.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Speaking of really good
DJs with their big claws. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Speaking of really good music, another one that I love, love, love with all my heart that I think is one of the, honestly, it's one of my top 10 of all time. It's a game I've talked about on the show before called Moon. Full name is like Moon RPG Remix Adventure or something like that. It is a game that originally came out in the 90s, only on the PlayStation and only in Japan. And a couple of years ago, Onion Games managed to localize it and bring it west and put it on the Switch. So it's now available. It is the game that inspired Undertale, or one of a couple. And you play as this child who gets sucked into the world of Moon, sucked into his own, to a video game that he's playing, and discovers that the hero of this video game is not a hero at all. He's actually been slaying innocent animals and causing all sorts of trouble for the inhabitants of this world. And so you sort of follow him on his adventure and try to repair the harm that he's done. So he's killed animals, so you can grab the souls of these animals and reattach them to their bodies and save them. You can help the inhabitants take care of their day-to-day problems and basically bring love. You gain levels. You gain LV love in the world of Moon. It runs on a 7-day internal, like, its own timer. And you can only early on in the game, you can only stay awake for so long before you have to go to sleep and regain your energy for the next day. But the more love you gain, the longer you can stay awake and the more things you can do in a day. So your goal is basically to get to know all the people in the world of Moon and learn what their day-to-day habits are and what their problems are and help them solve their problems and help them gain love.
That's just so wholesome.
It's really cool. And you can see as you play through it, there's one scene in particular that when you see it, if you're an Undertale fan, you're like, oh, this is just that thing in Undertale. This is the same thing. Yeah. But the music is incredible. I actually, not to promote my own work on a podcast I work for.
Why would you not promote your own work? Please promote your own work. Everybody go follow Duck Valentine on Twitter.
When this game came out, I interviewed the composers of Moon about how they composed this game, because in most of Moon, there is no backing soundtrack. It's just quiet, and there's like bird sound effects whatever. It's quiet. But you collect on your journey these things called Moon Discs. And then in a menu for the Moon Disc player that you get, you can build playlists of songs that will then play through your journey in the order that you set them. And you can have them repeat, or you can have them like in whatever order you want. And the music is incredible. The composers for this game, they did a couple songs themselves, but then they went around to all the underground bands in Japan that they were friends with and got everybody to contribute a song. So there's all these Whoa. 90s underground Japanese bands in Whoa. This game attributed under their actual band names for just these songs they did solely for Moon. And it is an incredible soundtrack that spans so many different genres and is so weird and not video gaming at all in the best way.
That's awesome.
Love it.
I freaking love it. I listen to it all the time just as sort of background music.
I'm hyped on this nice. One, on the music alone.
It's so
one.
Good. Also, same developer has announced it was on the most recent Nintendo Direct, on the Japanese version of that Direct that we didn't see, they announced their next game, which it's called Stray Children. I think
it looks so good.
There's not an international release date yet, but it again looks like it has sort of those Undertale Earthbound kind of flavors, if that's the sort of thing that you like. And I'm so stoked for it.
Man, I'm also, now you get me stoked. I'm going to go seek out this game. All these games I'm going to buy and not play. All right, what have you got next?
All right, next up, One Shot. One Shot is a game where you play as this young, like, little cat person named Nico, who wakes up in a dark room, doesn't know how he got there, and finds a light bulb, a very large glowing light bulb that he is told by various people is the sun of the world. And he has been chosen to deliver the sun to the top of this tower, the center of the world, which will save it. The world is actively in decay. It is about, like, literally about to fall apart as you are walking through it. People are looking around going, yeah, the world's probably going to end tomorrow. Oh God, what do we do? And you are the only person who can save it by delivering this light bulb, except you are not Nico. Nico is a separate character. You, the player, are your own character in this game. You, to Nico, are God. who is guiding him on his journey. And he talks to you, and you have to help him make decisions and solve puzzles.
Make god decisions.
Using your godlike powers to do things like look in the file directory of the game that you're playing, or mess around with settings on your desktop that Nico has no power to mess with.
I remember seeing trailers for this one. Like, I think we had this on one of our like indie showcase streams and stuff we've had, and I was like, this looks really interesting. So
it's very cool. It's called One Shot because you're told at the beginning of the game you only have one shot. There is no, you can't, it saves, but you can't like save scum or anything. Basically, when you exit the game, you exit it at whatever point you are currently at. And it's like Nico kind of falls asleep and then he wakes up and he's like, oh, I had like a weird dream that you weren't here. So there's no going back and redoing things. You just play it all in one sort of stretch.
Shot. Yeah.
It's really good.
Sweet.
Again, great soundtrack. Beautiful little game.
Beautiful. Love the art style on it.
Looks I've never even saw that one before. All right. What you got next?
Okay, I'm gonna keep powering through. Game that I reviewed for IGN.com a couple years ago, maybe last year, I don't remember. Tome. Little game where you go around these little diorama like worlds and take photos. It's a photo taking game. You're on a little photo taking adventure, black and white world, really, really well designed. Like I described Minute as being like very tight and complete. Tome, I think, has that same feeling where it just feels very intentional and put together in this nice way. The photo taking options are not like super extensive. This came out sometime around the vicinity of Pokemon Snap. And a lot of people were like sharing photos online and the options for like editing photos and doing things are not there. Like you can zoom in and out and there's this like sort of a selfie thing and stuff, but it's pretty simple, but it's simple on purpose. Cause it's a game about sort of observing and stopping and smelling the roses and taking in the scenery and helping people by taking photos. Very sweet.
I'm sure we'll get more of that stuff into them.
Ha 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 ha. Incredible.
Nice. Crushed that one.
What's next? I'm gonna smash two of them together to keep going fast. If you like language games, Heaven's Vault and Chants of Senar are two that I highly recommend. Heaven's Vault is a game I played years ago. I actually played it on PC. I didn't play on Switch. But it is a game where you play as this woman who is attempting to decipher this ancient language through all these items she comes across in this like really cool fictional world. So she's exploring and she is deciphering this language as she goes. And she's doing it through context clues. So you'll see there's like a well and there's sort of a symbol that looks a little bit like water on the well, and then you know, okay, this is probably the symbol for water, and then from there you can sort of extrapolate other pieces of text you see that might mean other things, and through talking to people as well and comparing symbols and reading documents and stuff. But it's really cool the way they turn language into puzzle, and the story, which I won't go deep into here, is really, really freaking good and deep and actually has room for multiple playthroughs to make sense. It's really, really cool.
Nice.
I would love for like a game like this where you go to decipher things, but you can decipher things completely wrong. Like you go to a well and you're like, this could be water, but it also could mean poison. And then you just like how you just kind of decipher everything based on that. And you're just like, people look at you like you're,
yeah, you certainly can get things wrong. There's just not really a consequence for that, except you just don't know what it says. Heaven's Vault
does do some cool stuff too, where it will introduce a word that you have to decode and you won't know, like there's a couple options and you kind of don't know if it means like water or something else or whatever, and you have to sort of guess. Mm-hmm. And then that guess will influence what you think that word means in other contexts. But then at some point you might learn a little thing that's like, oh, I've been kind of misunderstanding what this thing means. So therefore that other thing that I misunderstood is actually means this. And, yep. And like all the pieces fall into place. So there's a little bit of that where it will let you to a certain degree make mistakes that you then have to figure your own way out of once you have more context. Cause the way you explore is very, like self-driven.
Yeah, it's fairly open-ended. I mean, there's certain things that you have to do in a certain order to get to an ending, which if I remember, it's been a while since I played it. If I remember correctly, there's a couple different, there's one way to conclude the game, but there are different pathways you can take to get there and different circumstances you can be in when you get there. You can miss things. You can get through the game without having translated everything. There's entire areas you can just skip over or do completely out of order, if I remember correctly, which is there, my favorite. I got really into that game. There's a part where you find this book, and it's actually kind of hard to get. Like, it could really mess you up if you don't do the thing right. But you get this book, and it's literally just like a whole book in that language. And I just sat there. I was streaming it, and I sat there on stream, and I forgot I was streaming because I was so focused on just translating page after page after page because I was so into it. Yeah. It was really cool.
It's like the Voynich manuscript.
Oh, right.
Excuse me?
Nope. Isn't that the made-up thing? Or the thing they can't
decipher? We don't know if it's made up. Nobody's deciphered it.
Yeah.
But you can, yeah.
But they don't know what it is.
Nobody knows.
Similarly with language games, I recently played and finished Chants of Sennar, S-E-N-N-A-A-R, I believe, which is similarly a language and translation game that relies on, that asks the player to solve puzzles by deciphering language by looking into context. That one relies more on interacting with other characters and communicating with other people. So very early on, you see a character who waves at you and says something in like kind of a symbol that you don't know what it means, but you assume based on their actions, oh, that's probably the greeting in their language. They're probably saying hello. And so you sort of extrapolate from there. You're climbing basically a fictional tower. Well, a Tower of Babel that's sort of slightly different from the traditional legend. And there are five different languages that you encounter as you go up the tower through five different societies. And you have to work to decipher all five of them and come to a better understanding of these societies. And ultimately figure out what the problem is, because actually the problem in Chants of Sennar, the thing you are trying to solve and your goal, is not really communicated to you until towards the end, which is really neat. You're just like, oh, I wonder what's at the top of this tower. And then you get there and you're like, oh, there's a problem, but I have the power to solve it because I communicate with people.
Huzzah.
Yeah, it's really dope. Again, less than 10 hours. Super lovely game. Great for language nerds.
Anything else?
Really super duper fast. The last two, highly recommend Goragoa, which is a game I originally played on mobile when it came out. I find it very difficult to describe. It is a puzzle game that relies on understanding visual language and sort of moving things around in the environment, or looking at things in specific ways, to move forward. And then you basically like arrange these four kind of squares in ways that make sense. I'm not describing it very well. Tom, you've played this, right? How would you describe Goragoa?
I would describe it as an Annapurna puzzle game.
Great. Okay, that'll do it.
That actually tells a lot. I mean, I know that sounds joking, but that tells me like a lot.
Yeah, it's basically a bunch of images that you can sort of take apart and put back together and move around in different ways, and it requires using like perspective and observation of the environment to understand like what this. To do. If you're looking at the video version of this, you can see what it is.
It is a very, and you're not wrong to find it difficult, because it is a very sort of unique style of puzzle game and how you interact with it and its puzzles, but it's a really beautiful one too.
It is. And then the last,
you had one more,
the
Red?
Last one that I believe I've talked about on the show before and that I reviewed for IGN, which you can go read the review, is Chicory, A Colorful Tale. It was my favorite game a couple years ago. I don't remember what year that was either, because time is meaningless.
It was 2019 or 2020.
Something like, yeah, that sounds right. 2020, yeah. But you play as a little, it had to have been 2021 because I didn't work at IGN in 2020.
Oh, there you go.
But you play as a little fella, little friend who mysteriously gains the power of this magic paintbrush and is able to use the power of paint to make the world colorful. It has a lot to say about what it means to be a creative and what it means to use art to engage with the world, and how that can be very difficult at times when people only know you through your art. And it also has really cool painting mechanics and really clever puzzles and an absolutely gorgeous Lena Rain soundtrack. So Chicory, heck yeah.
Another good soundtrack game.
That's it. I'm done.
Okay.
There have been no other good games ever.
Yeah. No other good games, which is a bummer. So that leaves it to Tom to tell us some not good games.
Oh, you want me to go next?
Yes, please.
Okay, so some of these games definitely, like, and I think this has been a trend of the others listed as well, is like not necessarily all hidden gems, because the context I went into it with also was like the Switch is approaching the end of its life.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's 7 years of incredible games. You've probably missed some you know, that are really like, these are the ones that I think are are some of the ones that are worth going back to if you hadn't already, if you missed them.
That's the right context.
That's why I put Astral Chain in there as well.
Right, exactly.
Like, yeah.
So the first one I wanted to mention was a very small game that no one's played called Hollow Knight.
Nobody, never.
No, I'm sorry. I'll stop. Hollow Knight's great. Go play it if you haven't. Anyway, I guess the first one I will say is, because I feel like a lot of people pass over Return of the Obra Dinn based solely on the visual style. This is probably one of the best games I've ever played.
It is,
just by period.
It's so good.
It's a... also one bit, but 3D. So the visuals are like I know I talked to Sam Claiborne when it first came out, and he was like, I like, he had trouble getting past the visuals, which I think is fully.
That's the best part.
I mean, but it makes it hard to play sometimes, you know, it is visually sort of very different. And I think that turns a lot of people off from it, but.
I grew up playing games on a Macintosh, so this game appeals to me.
The concept of this game is that you are an insurance investigator who's showing up on a boat where
now you lost me.
Everyone is dead already or missing, and you just are like trying to piece together. You have a ledger of the entire crew and a little pocket watch that lets you see listen to the last moments of their life with a black screen, and then you get to, on the moment that they die, it flashes in and you can walk around like a frozen moment in time of them dying in that moment. And with all cool. That is the only thing, every time you find a corpse, you can do that. And so you have to take this ledger and a couple other tiny little clues and basically piece together who everyone is, how they died, and if they were killed, who killed them, basically. And it is just one of the greatest games I've it's that and the Outer Wilds are two games where I wish I could just fully wipe my brain and play them again, because there is no other video game I think that is exactly the same sort of experience or feeling, or in the closest you can get, I think, with Obra Dinn is something like the Telling Lies games.
Yeah.
I can't remember the names.
Yeah, Immortality was...
Immortality.
Among Us.
Not exactly like that, but yeah.
Right, exactly. Not exactly like that, but like kind of the closest you can get. And the reason it's so incredible, and this is the thing that I think sets it apart so widely in my mind as something that was like so unique, is it's an investigation game where all of the investigation, quote unquote, mechanics are not really mechanics. They are you looking at the environment, piecing together with visual clues and audio clues what happened to these people and who they are. And the amount of information that you can get out of, like, you'll go into these situations and you'll just be like, how am I supposed to find out who any of these people are? And then hours later, everything will be falling into place. It makes you feel so, so smart. It is so rewarding in a way that, like, you know, a quest log investigation game kind of doesn't really provide the same experience. It is just, it is phenomenal. I cannot recommend this game highly enough to anybody who has even a remote interest in puzzle games, really.
This year, I decided I actually wanted to, like, follow hockey a little bit more than just the most casual of casuals. So I subscribed to a service that streams all of the NHL to your television, the Boston Bruins home opener. I went to watch it and boom, blackout restrictions apply, which I thought was kind of ridiculous because I'm still 200 miles away from Boston, but whatever. Had I had NordVPN, that wouldn't have been a problem. I would have just gone in, changed my settings to another geographic area, and boom, I could have been watching all the Boston Bruins home games like it was nothing at all. So now I have NordVPN, and I can watch the home games of my local teams streaming without being frustrated. It's the same thing with, like, Netflix. It has all these complicated licensing rules, which from one country to another don't really make sense. So something you could watch on South Korean Netflix, you won't be able to watch on the United States Netflix unless NordVPN, boom, switch to South Korea, and you're watching whatever Korean drama that you want I highly recommend you do that. I haven't done it myself, but people seem to enjoy them. And who am I to try to bring down people's enjoyment? NordVPN, more than just entertainment and sports availability, it's going to protect you, especially when you're traveling, when you're using public Wi-Fi. People are trying to get in there. They're creeping on you. Bad actors, people trying to steal your password, your bank account details. Who knows what the government's doing these days? I can't keep track. They're all over the damn place. NordVPN is going to protect you. It's going to protect up to 6 devices, because I know you have at least that many devices in front of you right now that can hook up to the internet. Boom. Fastest VPN in the world. You're not going to get any buffering. You're not going to get any lagging. It's going to stop your ISP from bandwidth throttling, which they do. That's kind of sneaky, especially how much you're paying those guys. There's threat protection to protect you from viruses and malicious malware and whatever else unsavory actors are out there. If you want to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. That's nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. Victor Charlie. That link is also going to give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There is no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nice of them, and I appreciate that.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Yeah, so Oberdin, not like necessarily a hidden gem, but an absolute phenomenal game that if you skipped it, don't. It's just so good.
I said I'm not going to skip it.
a couple other games that I've definitely mentioned on the show before that I'll go quickly on. Tinykin came out a couple years ago.
Yes, I reviewed that one.
It's like, it looks sort of like Pikmin on the surface, but it is actually closer to something like the Banjo-Kazooie era platformer, modernized. Yeah. Really, really fun little 3D platformer. Not super long.
Very
fantastic
cute.
Art style. Very fun for collector completionist type players too. There's a lot to do there, and it's all pretty clearly laid out for you. Another one that I've also talked about, I know I've talked about on the show before, is Far Loan Sales. Is just a phenomenal, like, if you like Inside or Limbo or that style of platformer, it is super, super interesting, kind of intimate side-scrolling game where you're in this machine that you have to keep running and you have to fuel it up.
Wow.
And it's only, I think, like 3 hours long. The reason I'm mentioning that game also is because it got a sequel called Far Changing Tides kind of recently. I actually like the original more. And it's only like, I think it's literally like $3 on the eShop right now. So it's like really, really cheap because it's older. I'd highly recommend starting with the original Far Loan Sales. And if you're really into it, you can track out the Changing Tides. So those are a couple games I definitely mentioned before, I know.
It gives me kind of like a side-scrolling, like FTL kind of vibes is what it was looking like. Like, because you're like moving around and interacting with things.
Yeah, you're like running different little systems. If you Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time was another game where you're kind of like running around a big ship doing like operating different systems in your ship. Not a roguelike, to be clear, this, but yeah, similar sort of vibe of turn in that sense. Another game that's definitely not an indie game and definitely not small, but like if you are a strategy or tactics game fan, or if in the last few years you maybe picked up Fire Emblem, one of the Fire Emblem games, and went, hey, I'm actually really into this. I'd like to play more things in the same vein. Valkyria Chronicles 1 and 4 are in a bundle on Switch, I think for $40 US for both of them. And they are... Valkyria Chronicles is like one of... is in my top 10 games. It is one of my favorite games ever, ever, ever. And it's
I got the special edition of 4. And I just... Yeah.
It's cool that they're in a bundle, because another situation where I think the story is significantly better, but I definitely think the story is better in one. And I think the gameplay changes they made in four are just better. And no, you don't need to play two or three, which I think are only available on like PSP or something like that.
Yeah.
Some rando.
So you don't have to worry about missing the middle. This is a... Oh gosh, what's the best way to put it? I put it in my review a million years ago. I can't remember the exact wording, but it's like a JRPG real-time turn-based third-person shooter tactics game.
Yeah, that's I couldn't have said it better myself.
It's insane. It's in an alternate reality World War II with magic, and you're controlling your units on this battlefield, and you have looking down at them on a top-down tactical map, but then when you select one, you zoom in and you're actually controlling them in third person, and you can move and control them directly, and then enemies will shoot at you while you're moving, but then as soon as you press like the aim button, it goes back into turn-based, so you have to make these decisions where you can't just like run out into enemy fire when you're positioning yourself, but also you have the ability to make sort of like very careful decisions in a turn-based tactics style. It's so unique and so good for anybody who loves tactics or strategy games.
And I don't even like tactics and strategy games, and I like Valkyria.
There you go. So those are slightly older, not super old, but on the older side. So if you've come around to strategy games in the last few years, those ones are really, really worth going back for.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. I put down a million games, so I'll continue to go quickly. Another kind of cool, fun one that's weird and unique. I've tried to pick a lot of interesting games. Was Battle Chef Brigade? This is one I'm sure we talked about on the show years ago when it came out. But this is a match 3 / side-scrolling beat 'em up game where you are like, it's like Iron Chef. The match 3 part is Iron Chef, where you're competing to make delicious food. But then to get the ingredients, you got to run out the back door of the kitchen, and you're in a side-scrolling action game, and you kill monsters and then pick up their ingredients and run back into the kitchen and put them in a pot and cook them. It's really, again, very strange, but a genuinely high-quality game. I love when ideas like that work out, when somebody's like, I'm going to mash up these weird genres that don't sound like they should go together, and then it actually just, they figure out how to make it very, very fun. I've definitely mentioned this one on the show too, but again, it's been years since this came out, so I wanted to give it a love if you haven't played it.
Do it.
Yoku's Island Express is also worth going back for. It's a pinball Metroidvania. Once again, strange mashup of genres, but it's a side-scrolling Metroidvania game, but when you are a little stink bug mailman who's rolling around a little ball of mail, and you have to go around all the island delivering the mail. And the way you do that a lot of the times is by pushing this little ball into what are essentially pinball boards and have flippers. And instead of a jump button, you have to get onto these flippers and bumpers and kind of knock your way around the map. And it's a full Metroidvania just with this pinball movement mechanic. And it's also just one of those things that sounds like it would be weird and works so seamlessly and fluidly that you're surprised there aren't more games like it suddenly, you know? Stop me if anybody wants to jump in on any of these. And I
there's like four of these on your list that I'm like eagerly waiting for you to get to.
Okay. Then I'll keep going. I'll do a quick shout out to a game called, which I don't know. We've definitely, Lily definitely called out on this show a million years ago, which is the Adventure Pals.
Shout out to Lily.
And The Adventure Pals. Mm. And one of the reasons I call out the Adventure Pals is because you might know the developer's most recent game, Cult of the Lamb.
Massive Monster.
That's what it is.
And the Adventure Pals was I believe it has co-op side-scrolling sort of action game, and it's got the same sort of that. They make such cute games, right? And this one is not as creepy, but it's a really just very, very fun side-scrolling action game. If people are into that sort of thing, or we're looking for something with co-op, you know, to hold you over till Wonder or whatever. So that's a quick one. Another phenomenal one, if we want to go back to Annapurna, is Sayonara Wild Hearts.
Yeah!
This game is... I think when this game came out, I said to people in the office, I was like, I'm glad I didn't review this, because I don't think I could have not given it a 10. Like, it's like a 45-minute game. Essentially a concept album that you then play through this sort of like dodging obstacles game mechanic. It's beautiful. The music is phenomenal. It's, you can literally beat it in an hour because it's just this album that you're playing through. I listen to the soundtrack all the time. It's such a cool game. If you're, I will say, but maybe watch the trailer, and if it's like not your genre of music, probably you won't be into it as a whole. But if you're like bobbing your head, you will enjoy the rest of the game, I promise.
Okay.
Yeah, Sayonara Wild Hearts is
time for one more Tom pick. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well, let me just read,
I know it's hard.
Let me read the ones that I just wrote down, which is like,
okay.
Wilmot's Warehouse is a great organizing game. Spiritfarer, I've definitely talked about, yeah. is just an Love incredible game, like dealing with death in a really cool way as a platformer. Lonely Mountains Downhill is this awesome downhill mountain biking game. Monster Train, if you're a fan of Slay the Spire, absolutely play Monster Train. Monster Train is, I think, comparable to Slay the Spire, although maybe in my opinion not as like infinitely replayable. And then Hypnospace Outlaw. I don't know if this game is out on how this game would play to feel not, or how it would feel to play not on PC.
Right.
But Seth, you need to play Hypnospace Outlaw.
I know.
It's a,
everyone has told
you would eat
it's a game
up.
Where you're like a 90s it's a 90s PC internet simulator, basically, where you are like a mod going around looking for people breaking the internet law. It's like very, very funny and fun. But the last game I will actually give a little more time to, if you have not played this, I know I've mentioned it before as well, but is a game called CrossCode.
Yeah.
It's a top-down action RPG that came out a number of years ago and sort of blew people away with how much it had, because it's this really indie game. But like graphics in the vein of if you've been playing Sea of Stars lately, and it's so unbelievably deep and huge, and it's very, very fun. And the idea is that it's like you're playing, your character is going to this basically like MMO world, sort of. So like it feels like an MMO, but it's single player. It's fully single player. And it's, gosh, it's just, the combat is really good. The story is really good. It is shockingly long and big and has so much to dig into. So if you're a fan of action RPGs or like pixelated RPG games, CrossCode is, I think, mandatory for any fan of that genre. I don't say that very often, but it feels like one of those ones that really slips by people's radars and is just so, so much better than you would ever think looking at it as just like another pixelated indie RPG, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's also really good if you're a fan of like the dot hack, either games or anime, or just like Sword Art Online,
just
or
that kind of theme, that style.
The vibe of being in this very elaborate, like living within this very elaborate MMO where something has gone potentially awry, it really like delivers on that feeling specifically.
Yeah. Slept on this one for a while, and when I got to it, I was like, why did I wait so long to play this game? It's just I literally could not play anything else until I finished this game, because it was that good.
Like, this is kind of a backhanded compliment, and I don't mean it that way, but it is like, it's unexpectedly good.
Yeah,
right. It is sure. You I think looking at it on the surface, you would not think it is like quite as impressive as it ends up being.
I'll put it this way. So I didn't expect it to be as long as it was. Like, I went in, like, looking at the visual style and the pitch and the premise and everything.
Like,
I thought
15, 20 hours.
I thought 20, 30 max.
Yeah.
What's it tap out at? Like,
I think
100?
I think I put in 45, 50
it's
for it.
It's long.
It's got some depth.
And not in a bad way, though. I mean, it keeps you. It keeps you with it. Like, I wanted to keep going. It doesn't feel agonizing.
How long to beat says 53 hours for main and sides.
Okay, well, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it was quite long.
And they added a DLC to it. There's a, right? They had a DLC that dropped, I think, last year or the year before. I can't remember. But yeah, there's even more stuff. It's even longer
now.
So
that's a big pile of games that I love and don't want you to forget about in the last, 7 years. I literally went through a list of, like, since the Switch came out and was like, what do I really want to like tell people that is worth going back for and trying again?
Yeah.
They missed it.
For everybody going, oh no, the Switch is near the end of its life cycle. It doesn't have any good new games coming out. Well, I bet you didn't play all the ones we just listed. So get on it.
Yeah,
I didn't, and I try to play everything.
Do.
Hey, everyone. It's Red the Producer just hijacking the podcast real quick because I have a few of my own personal recommendations, and I don't have a lot of time, so... yeah, let's get this started. 13 Sentinels, Aegis Rim, developed by Vanillaware, Kaiju, and Time Travel. It's amazing. Please go play it. Let's move on. The Case of the Golden Idol, Return of the Obradin, as Tom Mark said, Celeste, Strange Horticulture, Dredge, Inscription, Steamroll Dig 2, Katana Zero, Eastward, and a little gem called Horus. That's really good. It's about a robot that gets brought up into this family and stuff happens. It's really cute. Okay, gotta go get the thing now. Okay, bye.
Also, this week's NVC column is going to be about these games, as well as other people like who've been on NVC are throwing in their suggestions as well. But I'm going to real rapid fire my picks. Axiom Verge 2, I never shut up about it. It's a game that I started playing. I never actually played the first. I own the first, but I never played it. Played the second one, and it was one of those games I was telling Jada, I was like, oh, I'm playing this every night until I'm done. And I did that, and I loved
it. We were talking about this in the planning meeting, and like after I saw the suggestion for it in there, I was like, oh, I have that downloaded. Let me go ahead and try it. I lost like 3 hours of my night playing that game because I was like, this is so good. And I was like, I almost contemplated stealing it from Seth for this list so it could fit in my list of games.
I would have been honored to make a quintuple A list. So the other one, I picked this one, Boomerang X, and then I saw news that the developer's shutting down.
Oh.
Yeah, it's very sad.
Sucks.
Yeah.
But the developer, dang, yeah. They were working on Boomerang X 2. This one was one of those, like, I think, Tom, either you or Dan was like, do you want to check out this game? Like, no stress if you do. And I was like, and I checked it out, and I was like, I need to review this game because this game rules. It's not, like, super fast or super long. I think it's maybe, like, 3 or 4 hours. But it's fun, it's pretty challenging, and it's different. And it's the closest thing we've had to like a Metroid first-person game, even though it's not. But if you play it, you'll know what I mean. Panzer Paladin, another game that I reviewed that I loved a lot. Loop Hero, I never shut up about
that. Loop Hero's
great. in the earlier days before it came to Switch, that game rules. And then Arcade Paradise is the most fun you'll ever have washing socks. That game is weird and awesome, and everyone should check that one out. So there it is. Like I said, we're going to put these into our column this week. So if you missed any, don't worry about it. There'll be more. This is like we're eating good in the Switch world. Like this is, I would dare say that the Switch's library is the best of all time for any game system ever.
Wow.
That's a bold claim.
This is a bold claim.
Well, it's a true claim.
Yeah. I think it's up there. So, certainly. Like it's very, very high
up
there.
At the top. It's the number one game library of all time. You know why? Because even if there was only one game and that game were Tears of the Kingdom, it would win against all the others. That's the best game ever created by human beings. A little game, a little indie called Tears of the Kingdom. So, yeah. All right. Like we were saying at the top of the show, Tom has been gone. But real quickly, Tom, you came back. You've got this beautiful little baby now. You're excited to be back to work, but you're a little bleary-eyed because you have a baby. You can't sleep. And then your life is hectic. And then you reviewed a really horrible video game. Let's talk about Avatar.
Yeah. I reviewed Avatar Quest for Balance. I don't know why I did. I wanted to hurt myself. I was in too good of a mood, I guess. No, this is a game that we saw. It got announced like 3 months ago. And then they were like, hey, it's coming out in a couple months. And we were like, oh, okay. And I saw the trailers and I was like, I don't know about that. But people have been waiting for a good Avatar The Last Airbender game.
Keep waiting, folks.
For so long. This is not it. It's just real bad. To be clear, I did this to myself. I chose to review this game, but it's just like a mess of a thing. It is so clunky. The combat is bad. The way it retells the story is sort of embarrassing and rude to the source material. As people watching, like, so much of the game is turned into just like sliding block puzzles rather than anything else.
Yeah, this looks like an iPhone game circa 2011, like, yeah. All the gameplay mechanics.
There's so much of the game is built around these puzzles where the like conceit of the puzzle is that you can't jump while you're holding a torch and you got to get a torch to a different place.
Well, you can burn yourself.
And it's like the avatar can literally fly. And it's like, no, you can't get past that beam of water that he can control with a torch. it just feels so poorly thought out. I don't know fully what happened here. It feels like they got to a minimum viable product, and then the publisher or whoever, I don't assume to know how game development works, was like, okay, we just got to get this out the door. Because if they had a couple more years making this, it probably would have benefited greatly from it. It just feels super, super rushed and super, like, it's just not good. It's very sad. Everything
I'm seeing on the screen just looks bad.
The bit that we're watching right now, if you know the Avatar series, is like a very emotional, like it was basically showing a comic book retelling, mm-hmm. style retelling of what in the show is a very like hard emotional episode and like character moment for Aang. What, did they just like breeze over that? There's no,
literally this is the review it cut off, but literally right after that panel of Momo shows up being goofy, it shows the literal corpse of his teacher like on the ground, and it's like Aang found his dead teacher. Anyway, moving on to this sliding block puzzle. It's like ridiculous when it, how much often it does that.
I know that's what I do when I lose a loved one that was murdered. I go out and solve puzzles, and you know.
No, and literally, you know, I think
deal with grief in our own ways.
I genuinely think that the scene right after that, because it just sort of glosses over that episode where he discovers that all of his airbending friends are dead, and then it's like, here's a Temple Run knockoff where you're riding an elephant koi. Play that now. And you're like, but what about why? But why? Well, we could have done that other thing. Ugh. Right? And it's a really, really baffling game. It's very unfortunate. I don't like just bashing on games for no reason, but this is, I give it a 4. This is the lowest score I've given a game since Balan Wonderworld. And I had hope that it would maybe be something kind of interesting, but it's just not.
Has there ever been a good Avatar game?
They have money to make things that have a little more care put into them than this.
Yes. So I don't want to get... This is the same publisher that made Nerf Legends, which I believe we gave a 2?
Sounds right.
I think they do a lot of licensed things, and some of them are Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl or Nickelodeon Kart Racers.
Sure.
And others are Quest for Balance and Nerf Legends. And it's just like the quality consistency is really, I believe it's called Game Mill Entertainment is the publisher. And they just like, some of the things feel very rushed. Some of the things feel like they've had a lot of care put into them, but they mostly do these licensed things, and it's very hit and miss from what I've seen.
That's kind of the story of licensed video games generally, right? Sure. Like, I mean, Seth, you're a little older than the three of us, but I remember growing up.
I'm a lot older than you all three combined.
But we grew up in an era where you could go to like a Walmart and they would have a giant bin outside the video game right. technology section mm-hmm. that was full of like $10-$20 discount video games, and you'd rifle through it and it would be almost entirely licensed games, and the quality level was real hit or miss. Like there are so many licensed games that were just bad and unmemorable and not worth your time at all, but every once in a while you'd get one or two where you're like, yeah, that was really like, I very distinctively remember the Lord of the Rings games, or at least one of them being
Two Towers specifically was quite good.
Mm-hmm. And there's like a handful of other licensed games out there that I know are very beloved to people. But by and large, I think it's because licensed video games in general are very often not conceived because somebody had a really good idea that fit perfectly within to a specific licensed property. They exist because somebody who had an IP thought, let's do a video game.
Let's capitalize on the popularity of this new movie or TV show.
And then found someone to spit it out as quickly and as under budget as possible.
There's also the problem of like the telephone game meets too many cooks where you know, knowing somebody who worked as like the middle person between like a licensee and a developer. It's a nightmare. Every little change has to go up to like the chain, and then somebody has to approve it, and then they bring it back down, and then they change their mind, and things get watered down and washed out, and it's terrible.
Yeah.
And
like licensed games We went through that era where they were really bad. There was a time where most of them were pretty bad. We've gotten to a point.
South Park for Nintendo 64. Yeah,
well, South Park for 64 was fine, but South Park's Chef's Love Shack, that was the bad one.
The one.
Yes. We've gotten to a point now where they're starting to get a lot better. The newer South Park games are great.
Yep.
Stick of Truth, Fractured
Star Wars
are great.
Star Wars games are great.
Star Wars games are doing
Marvel
well.
Spider-Man. We're looking forward to Wolverine coming.
Yeah, the Marvel stuff has been
Well, hit or miss. Avengers,
generally
hitting. Like, I enjoyed Avengers, but I know it's not a great game that a lot of people did not enjoy.
Sure.
Great story mode, fair, but very repetitive.
Sounds like it's probably better than Avatar.
And that's what I was going to say, is Avengers specifically is an interesting case. I reviewed it. The story mode of that game was fun.
It's fantastic.
The story mode of that game was not bad. And then it was the live service stuff that felt like it was the really big miss there. So it kind of missed in a different way than just like the bargain bin licensed game does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we had old good ones too. Marvel Ultimate Alliances were great back in the day. One better than two. Yeah. Two was fine, but one was better. But yeah, I think we're getting to a point where it's like, I think developers are getting smarter about things that they decide to take on for an IP license, like Firaxis did Midnight Suns. It's right in their wheelhouse, strategy games. And I really enjoyed Midnight Suns. I know a lot of people don't like card games and their strategy stuff because it feels too random. But I will say, if you haven't played Midnight Suns, go play Midnight Suns, because it gets a lot better the more time you put into it, because you customize things out and then you just set up some amazing wombo combos. Yeah.
Games as a baseline are so much more expensive to make now. It takes so much more time to make.
That's also true.
I think if you are somebody at a corporation that has something and you think, oh, let's make a video game, and then you look at the prices just for baseline video games, you immediately go, well, nah, that's fine.
Yeah.
I do think it's correct that we have far less just sort of churned out
licensed stuff.
Nonsense. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to bring this back around. Yeah. We were talking about how I'm way older than you. I remember going to Sears and picking through the $1 Atari 2600 and ColecoVision games because a licensed game had caused the industry to collapse. That was, of course, the ET game, which Atari made a lot of mistakes, but that was kind of the thing that broke the dam back in the 80s. But yeah, good times to just have your parents throw you into a bin full of video games and tell you, pick out five. All right. We talked so much about games that we like. Now we have to talk about games that we hate. Just kidding. I don't do that. But we're actually going to go to question block.
Let's do it.
So that we can answer some questions from you, the audience. Send them to nvc@ign.com with the subject line. And I can't stress this enough. The subject line has to be question block, or else it gets filtered out and I don't see it. I have a catch-all little inbox for question block stuff to go. Please, the love of God, question block. That's all you need to put. Okay. Andres Villalba asks, what's the first video game you ever played, and what is the first Nintendo game that you ever played? Tom, I want to start with you. What's the first video game you ever played? And if it's the same game, like, that's even better.
I don't remember the exact timing because I was super young. So the first Nintendo system I ever had, my family ever had, was a Super Nintendo. And I do distinctly remember playing Link to the Past very, very young. My mom would tell
Hell
me.
Hell yes.
Yeah.
A great first game.
My mom would tell me that she would stay up after me and my brother went to sleep and play Link to the Past. But then also we would play Myst with her on her computer a lot.
Oh, that's not really a game.
All right. Ouch.
Wow.
Shots fired. So those are
Sorry, Myst fans. Sorry, Mysties.
That's those
are the games that I remember earliest, right? Because I was extremely young when we were playing those.
Okay.
Because, Link to the Past came out in, 91. It came out in 91, and I was born in 91. So, sorry,
oh
Seth.
Oh, my God, dude.
Sorry, Seth.
And now Were you all three born in the 90s, by the way? Were you all
yeah.
born
no,
in the
No, I'm
90s?
An 80s baby.
Whoa.
Hell yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Seth, let me make you feel really old. I was born in 91, and now I have a child.
Tom, don't you and I have a very close birthday or something? Didn't we establish that at some point?
I think so.
I think I remember that conversation, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Tom and I are the exact same age.
Yes, it's true. We're twins.
Yes.
No, yeah, so I think it was probably one of those. Link to the Past is probably the right answer.
That's a pretty good That's a pretty good first game. All right, Jada, in the 80s.
In the 80s.
What do you remember?
So my first game is I was like two, 3 years old, barely able to hold a controller. But I also got to hold a gun because Super Mario and Duck Hunt was my first combination game.
That's why you're pro crabs having guns.
Yes, that's why I'm pro crabs having guns. Yeah, you know, anytime you get to shoot birds out of the skies in a video game, I'm all for it. That also might explain why I like to shoot deer in video games, even if it doesn't give you anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that's just a part of my upbringing. Thanks, Mom and Dad.
Hate deer so much.
But yeah, no, original Mario and Duck Hunt. I was terrible at both. I was 2 years old, so, you know, forgive me. I was sitting there just trying to make Mario jump and move across the screen. I think the furthest I probably ever made it was probably World 2-2 at 2. But you know, I take that as pretty good. I remember my dad sitting there with me and, you know, kind of
nice
working through it.
Honestly, being able to coordinate a jump over over anything.
Oh, I died many times. Really, I died many times, and he told me I used to cry.
Be a gamer.
He told me I cried a lot, but it's okay. It was two. That's, you know.
And then when Jada was four, she figured out the minus world glitch. So.
But yeah, that was me. I was
nice. That's a good one. All right, Reb, no pressure. 90s. It's gonna be like. It's going to be a GameCube game.
You will actually never guess. This is the first video game I ever played.
First video game you ever, ever, ever played, and then the first Nintendo game that you ever played.
Same one. You will absolutely never guess this. It is a wild deep cut.
Donkey Kong 64.
It is a wild deep cut.
It's older than you expect.
Older than I expect. I'm going to say you played like Kid Icarus or something.
No. It was on the Nintendo Entertainment System. When I was a child of roughly 5-6 years of age, I was in the after-school program because my parents couldn't pick me up.
1997.
My parents couldn't pick me up right after school, so I had to go to the after-school program for a couple hours. And they had a Nintendo Entertainment System, and it had many games. It had Mario. It had Duck Hunt, but they took the gun away, so we couldn't play it.
There was a crab in the class.
It had Marble Madness, awesome, which trouble. I remember very fondly.
Oh man, I love Marble Madness.
But the first, and it had Legend of Zelda as well. But the first one I actually played was this weird game called Milan's Secret Castle.
Oh my God. Wow. That is a deep cut.
It is, which if you do not know Milan's Secret Castle, it is Mario-like. It is a platformer where you play as a little dude who can shoot bubbles that do damage to enemies. And it's almost kind of open world because you start, there's this castle outside and you can go into the doors in any order, but some of them you just like, yeah, there it is. That's Milan's Secret Castle. Some of them you just physically can't reach until you unlock like ladders and pathways and stuff. But you enter these rooms and each room is kind of a different level and they're very open ended. And the majority of progress is made by shooting bubbles at various walls and blocks until you find ones that break and give you like the key to move on. As you can see in the gameplay we're watching, there's absolutely no telling unless you already know which ones are going to break and which ones don't. So it's very difficult to progress in this game. And as you know, children tend to be at games, I was not good at this. The thing to do, because we had a 10-minute.
To be fair, it's not a good game.
No, not especially. We had time limits because we're playing in the after-school program, so we could only play. We had a little egg timer, and we would set it for 10 minutes. And after 10 minutes, it would ring, and you had to give up the controller to the next person in line. And so you can't get very far in this game in 10 minutes. And the thing most people did was not know how to play, walk all the way to the right like you do in Mario, jump off the edge, and end up in the well, which is super dangerous. And you would usually either die or just be completely
it's
unable
true in
to
life
get out.
Also.
Yeah. So, yep. Yeah, I have terrible fond memories of this game. Never got anywhere.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. It's not a good game. It's an earlier NES game. I can't remember who the developer is, but it's one of those ones that I'm feeling like was one of those ones that just made like that kind of crappy game that wasn't that great, but it was early. The early Nintendo games, they're still figuring things out.
Yeah.
So, all right, now I'm going to talk about how old I am again. The first game, I don't know if I played it, but I remember the first video game I ever saw was that really bad version of Pac-Man on Atari 2600.
Oh, man.
I remember seeing it. I don't remember like whose house it was. It was like friends of my parents, and they had like an older kid. Well, he's older than me. I was probably four. He He was like 8 or 9 and he was down in the basement playing. And I just sat there and just was like, oh my God, this is the most incredible thing I've ever seen in my life. He's moving that stick and then the little thing on the screen is moving. And I, like I said, I don't remember if I actually played it. One of the worst ports of all time. Look at how bad that is.
God.
God, the Atari 2600. I have no fondness for that machine whatsoever. But this was the first game. I think it was even on like a black and white TV. So, but yeah, I was hooked. I was like, I gotta see more. I need to make this my life. And I did. Good for me. First Nintendo game I ever played. I definitely 100% remember going over to my friend Daniel. What up? Shout out to Daniel Bowles. He lives in Burlington, Vermont now. I think he's like a journalist.
Oh, cool.
He's doing all right. Good for him. Shout out to his whole family. They're wonderful people. Yeah. So we go over there and his dad would always just be like, oh, I went to a yard sale. I bought an Atari 2600. I bought an Atari 5200. He would just like bring home like an Intellivision. He got a like yard sale. So we would just go to Daniel's. We would play all these really bad games. And then one day he's like, dude, you got to come over for a sleepover. He didn't say dude because it was, you know, like 1986. Anyway, he was like, you got to come over for a sleepover. We rented this Nintendo thing. And I was like, oh, well, yeah, obviously I'll come over for a sleepover. And then, I mean, it was like the scales fell off my eyes. Like, we'd only seen these crappy, you know, Intellivision, Coleco, Atari 5200 consoles. And then there was this little man, a little plumber from Italy. You might know his name, Giuseppe. He was working on the sink and he's like, hey, you got to play this Mario game. So we played Super Mario Brothers. That is the first game. And it was more mind blowing than the first time I saw a video game, period. Because I was like, there's a point to this. The games before that, there was no point. You just got points. Like you say, like I said, the joke you're making earlier, like you just got points. You get to the highest level you could. But I was like, wait a minute. And then my friend's like, dude, no, wait. Push down on that pipe. And I was like, okay. Oh my God. There was something. Just such a mind-blowing experience that seared into my memory. Two of my three most biggest jumps forward in video gaming were Mario games, which was the original Mario and then Mario 64. Like I haven't felt that way playing a video game other than the first time I did VR. It was like such a shift in the way things were. So that was the very first Nintendo game I ever played. Super Mario Brothers. Shout out to the Bowles family out there in Burlington, Vermont. That's where they live now. Used to live in Maine. Friends with my family. Okay. I rambled a little bit too long. I apologize for that. I got excited.
Never apologize.
Josh
Gowing
asked, and we only have about 2 minutes.
Fast.
So this is going to have to be like rapid fire. Besides Donkey Kong 64, what is a game that is widely recognized as terrible that you still love? First off, no, I'm just going to throw it to Reb. Reb, what's a game that you love that is generally felt as a terrible game?
So pick someone else really quick.
Quest 64. Okay, Jada. I love this RPG.
Wow, I've
back
never
on the,
heard anybody say that.
It is not a great RPG, but I loved it back in the day. I had to rent it multiple times until I was able to actually find a physical cartridge and buy it on my own when I got older. But I love the ability to just kind of build your character differently, which was a thing I didn't really experience in RPGs back in the day, where you could choose, do I want to be a fire mage? Do I want to be a water mage? It was Avatar. Without being Avatar, you had fire, water, earth, and wind. And depending on how you upgraded the combination of skills, you would get different spells and stuff. And there was buffs, debuffs, damage, all types of different spells. It was great. I loved it.
All right. All right.
I remember enjoying
one and only person. All right, Tom, what about you? What's a terrible game that's generally recognized as terrible that you love?
Well, I will not stand for Donkey Kong 64 slander. I love that game.
Neither will
we. Yeah, same.
But B, probably this is heavily based on nostalgia, but Bubsy. I played the crap out of Bubsy when I was a little kid and didn't know any better. And it is like the first Bubsy, to the point where like
a good one.
The music, because you die so much in that first level because it's a terrible game, that like I remember him, the tone he says, what could possibly go wrong at the beginning of that, like every, oh man, Bubsy will stay with me. I know it's not good, but it does stay with
me. It's fine. That's the point here. Reb, what do you got?
I I looked it up, and it's apparently not regarded as bad as I think it was, but a little DS game called Contact by Grasshopper. Ooh, that yeah. I really liked.
Contact.
And it was her dad the whole time.
No, it was touted as sort of an Earthbound-like, and I think it disappointed a lot of people because it wasn't quite as funny and it wasn't quite as deep, but I really dig the ending to that game, and I wish they had made a sequel, and the little dog Mochi was so cute.
That is actually a cute looking game. I'm going to say real quick before we go, the Faxanadu for the NES, I love that game. It's not really well regarded, but I still love it nonetheless. It's got some cool RPG elements. It's got some cool graphics. And you climb a big tree and there's elves and dragons and stuff. And that's what 12-year-old me was super into. 12-year-old me and 45-year-old me. All right, but that's all the time we have for this week's NVC podcast. My outro has been deleted accidentally, so I'm just going to wing it. If you're watching us on YouTube, leave us a like and a nice comment. If you are listening to us on a podcast platform, please leave us a review. It helps spread the good NVC word. Reb, Jada, Tom, thank you all so much. Red, shout out on the ones and the twos. And remember, Nintendo Voice Chat is the only podcast where you can
get the thing.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.